Hello, friends. Welcome to the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about cultural grievances plus sunk cost fallacy equals Trump's base. Now, what this is about is Trump's base, as you can tell. I don't want to talk about him so much because we talk about him a lot, and I know that that kind of gets repetitive, but you know, he dominates the news. I mean, he really dominates the news. In a way, every election with an incumbent president is about the incumbent and about the mood of the country, but that's really true this year. That's 100% true this year. And I know that it gets repetitive talking about Trump, who in many ways is the most predictable man in America. I don't think he's that interesting. Like, he's not a fascinating person to me. I'm not obsessed with him like a lot of the media is. A lot of Twitter is, quite frankly. They pretty much only talk about him. I can't wait till the day that we don't talk about him, till we can move on to other things. And people that are a bit less transparent, that are harder to see for what they really are. This is really a little bit about his base. Why do they vote for him? Why do they just not see the truth about this guy that is so transparent, that is so obvious? And I want to kind of talk about them and really get deep into them, because I feel like there's a few things that basically explain them. I don't think Trump's base is very complicated. I don't believe this bullshit that, like, oh, they see what we can't see and they see an America that, I don't think that they're really that deep. I kind of believe in Occam's razor. You know, the simplest explanation is usually the best. You have to either believe that the elites and the professionals and the educated people and the ex-government experts, from David Frum to Bill Kristol to all these people that worked in the Bush White House, to any military official that actually knows what they're talking about, to John Kasich, a lot of the Republican Party that's become never-Trumpers are very educated and very smart. They're all backing Joe Biden. You either believe that that's because the simplest explanation, which is that Donald Trump is a moron, he's dangerous, he's incompetent, he's unqualified, and they know that he is crazy, and that's why they're doing it. That's why they're breaking party ranks. And that seems to be the simplest. Or you have to believe the Trump base. Trump, a man who has been put in office by Russia and foreign agents, is secretly the ultimate patriot. And he's got to save America from a deep state cabal that wants to secretly undermine it. How do they want to undermine it? They want to give third worlders America in a basket. Jews are bringing in third worlders to replace them on the assembly lines of America. They're doing this intentionally as a scheme to push out real Americans, and that way make America basically, I suppose you might say, like, kind of just a gas station for wealth and one world, one planet wealth. And it's Bill Gates and the Clintons and all these elitists that are doing this. And Trump's the only one that sees them for what they really are. And that's why they're so desperate. The CIA, the intelligence agencies, the far left, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, all these different groups, they're desperate to get rid of the one man that can save America. Now, you might sit there and think, but if he's dividing everyone from the CIA to Antifa and Black Lives Matter, who are usually not on the same page. They don't really agree politically on anything. But if they're agreed in terms of Trump is dangerous and they want to get rid of him, isn't that uniting America, that he's so divisive that all these different groups hate him? And aren't you really the ones dividing America if you're going against everyone from Colin Powell to Antifa, right? No, they don't see it that way. Of course, I believe in Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is the best. It comes down to, well, why do they believe it? Because they're stupid. You either have to believe that people who are extremely educated and professional and they've worked in government their whole lives and they know what they're doing. You have to believe that they don't know what the fuck they're doing and talking about. But a retiree in Sheboygan who wears a MAGA hat and goes to Trump's rallies and thinks coronavirus is a hoax and basically believes that Hillary Clinton ran a sex pedophile ring and QAnon knows what they're talking about. The simplest explanation is the best. These people are full of shit, morons. They don't know what they're talking about. They're not educated. They don't follow politics. And so to revert that into being like, well, it's snobbery for liberals to say they're idiots. Maybe they are idiots, but we're going to get deeper into that. I don't really believe that all these people don't know what they're following. I think that they kind of do. And I want to kind of debunk a lie right off the bat before we really get too deep into it. A lot of people put this idea out there that Trump is the silent majority, that a lot of his base is hiding and they're going to go in and they're going to block vote out Biden. I personally believe the only way Biden loses is if Trump cheats. I think Trump has to cheat to win. I think he knows this. I think that's why you've seen him do everything from defund the post office to put a campaign backer into the post office to rant and rave about mail-in ballots, because he clearly was going to try to rig the machines, the initial plan, because he likes to draw attention to how he'll cheat. He couldn't get away with that. Then he tried to fuck up mail-in balloting. Now he's tried to tie things like the second stimulus was being tied to defunding the post office. It's very clear. He's a very transparent man in a lot of ways. You know, he doesn't even try to hide his corruption. He goes and does an interview with Lester Holt saying, yeah, we had to get rid of Comey because of the Russia thing. Brags about obstruction of justice. Goes out to a campaign rally in 2016 and says, hey, help me Russia. Russia, help me find Hillary's emails. He puts a White House phone call with Ukraine asking them for help finding dirt on Joe Biden. Same thing with China. There's a dozen people listening to this. He's not shy about hiding his corruption. In a way, he's an honest crook. Even in 2016, when he was running for office, he would do interviews with Anderson Cooper, elaborately laying out how he would buy politicians and he would give them money, and then he was able to get them on the phone when he wanted a favor later on. He even says, could I have gotten Bill and Hillary to come to my wedding if I hadn't given them a donation? He's never been shy about hiding the fact of corruption, and he almost doesn't seem to think there's anything wrong with that. He kind of likes getting away with it. There was a book that Malcolm Gladwell wrote called Blink, and one of the chapters was about how you can see deception in micro expressions, the way someone's mouth twists, a gleam in their eye, certain things that FBI forensic people pick up on. And they were talking about watching clips of Bill Clinton, all the sexual harassment and all the blowjobs and all the affairs. He kind of liked that people knew about them. He sort of liked that it was right out in the open when he would say things like, well, it depends on what your definition of is. There was a danger to that. He liked flirting on the knife edge of disaster. He liked getting that close to it. There was a certain thrill that he got out of fooling people. Trump, of course, has that same thing. He likes to get as close to the edge as he possibly can. I mean, people say narcissistic personality disorder, maybe borderline personality disorder. Either way, he likes to put his corruption right out there. He likes everybody to see it. Kind of likes getting away with it. He likes being the naughty boy who pulled one over and having these fucking idiots like the evangelicals in the Republican base go out there and talk about he's the best man since Jesus Christ. Deep down, I think he probably feels some self-loathing. I know that most really, really narcissistic, egotistical people don't like themselves very much. There's a part of him that I think believes he's a piece of shit, and that's why he's got to go out there and say, I'm the best at everything. I'm the best president since Abraham Lincoln, because he knows that's not true deep, deep down. And that's why he's drawn to women that clearly don't like him very much. Melania is a paycheck. She's there because he paid her, basically. He bought her citizenship and gave her a lifestyle. She has no feelings for this man. She doesn't like him, let alone love him. She doesn't even like him. Probably is not around him that much when there's no cameras or state visits. He's drawn to these women that he knows can't love him because he doesn't love himself. And then he's drawn to these crowds. Like, he loves the big rallies. Like, this campaign process is miserable for him because he can't go out there and pack a 10,000 people stadium in Mobile, Alabama because of coronavirus. He couldn't do the things he wants to do. But he's the kind of person that if there was 100 reporters in a room asking him questions and 99 of them were puff pieces, the one that's not, the one guy who's not clapping up in that rally, 10,000 people, the one guy who's not clapping, who's holding up a protest sign, that's the person that drives him fucking crazy. He can't stand it that there's that one person. And that's what he fixates on. He's not really fixated on the adoring crowds, Fox News, 9 out of 10 reporters kiss his ass. But he wants the one that doesn't, and he tweets about them, and he wants to get rid of them. He's fixated on the people that don't like him. And for a president that the majority of people don't like, that's very dangerous. And we're going to get into why I think he's bad, even for his base, I think he's bad. Psychologically, I think he's bad for his base. But I want to talk about this idea that there's a hidden vast army of Trumpers out there. Questions come out there like this one. Has it become harder for people to publicly say they are Republicans? No, but Trump fans like to believe that because they want to believe there is a secret army of them out there, and secretly everyone believes as they do. The reality is that Trumpers talk about their love of Trump often. They never get tired of defending him. They might blast liberals on Facebook or Quora or Twitter or whatever, but they are most definitely not hiding. This idea that they are hiding, I can't wear a red cap out in public or Antifa will beat me up in the parking lot, like that's horseshit. That's that Christian conservative white persecution fantasy that Trump plays on. But they want to believe that they're the silent majority, that it's hard to poll accurately. The pollsters don't know them. They don't get them. Only Trafalgar and Rasmussen, the Republican pollsters, they're the only ones that poll them accurately. And that's why Biden's going to get beat, because everyone is terrified of Black Lives Matter or Antifa or cancer culture coming for a fucking retiree in Sheboygan who wears a MAGA hat. In truth, Trump did not win a majority of votes in 2016. It shouldn't be that surprising that he's never polled in the majority either. The polls are accurate. So this conservative fantasy, it's a conservative persecution narrative, and it's seductive for Trump's base. It's a big part of the reason why they voted for him in the first place. Trump normalizes this white victimhood beliefs and ultra-right conspiracy theories, and they love him for it. Then they are not the deplorable outliers that they've been portrayed as. but rather perfectly reasonable, normal people who support a sociopathic, aspiring tyrant who's been sued 1,200 times, ran a Ponzi scheme while campaigning for POTUS, Trump University, would cheat on his wife with a fire ant bed, lies like most people breathe, bankrupted casinos, didn't even know that was possible, and was installed by a hostile foreign government because they hate America. You know, just as perfectly normal, reasonable people do. But now here's another question, though. If they know that he's so despicable, why would Republicans support something that they can't publicly say they're for? They like to wear that badge, like, I'm a deplorable. They'll put that on Twitter, like, oh, I'm a deplorable. Like, it's a joke. If your whole thing is like, I'm for this guy because he's despicable and we want to own the left and troll the left, why is that a thing to aspire to for your vote? Isn't that just like a self-defeating purpose? Like, when trolls get on message boards and Twitter and they fucking harass people and they have 2 followers and they're harassing people that have 100,000, how's that healthy for somebody? Like, if I'm doing that, isn't that bad for me also, if I'm the troll? Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to hear the guy in the bar being like, I could have been, if it weren't for that one touchdown that didn't work the right way, I would have played college football, and then from college, I would have played professional football, and then I would have beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. That's what would have happened if only we hadn't lost the Abbotville-Boaz football game back in high school. People don't want to hear that. I think people generally like to believe that you determine your own success to an extent, and sometimes you don't. Sometimes there's a lot of things out of your control, but people don't want to believe that. They want to believe that anyone who's successful, they were destined to be successful. And all it takes is hard work. And they don't want to believe in luck and family connections and certain breaks going the right way. They don't want to hear that. But they really don't want to hear it from Trump, because this is the luckiest fucking man on the planet. Like, I remember when Mark Cuban, he was nailing Trump. He talks about he's a victim, he's being bullied, it's bullshit. But he does that partly because he truly believes it. The luckiest man on the planet never knows he's the luckiest man on the planet. That's one of the great tragedies of him, is he thinks everybody's against him. And we've run through this many, many times. Slept with models and actresses, and every wife he has is hotter than the last one. And then his personal fortune, getting inherited $400 million from his father, bankrupting casinos, but still getting money, somehow falling ass backwards into the presidency of the United States through a weird quirk of the Electoral College when he was never late. I mean, you could add them up over and over. But he doesn't believe that he's lucky, and he doesn't see his good fortune. And of course, that's where most people that have a lot of good fortune, they don't see it that way. They think they were just destined by God, or they worked so hard that it was inevitable that they would be a big success. We know that it doesn't totally work out that way. But my question really is, why would Republicans support something that they can't publicly say they're for? All right, I remember back in the heyday of the Catholic sex abuse scandals, people that were being like, oh, I'm a Catholic, I hate seeing the persecution of Catholics. I remember talking to a woman who said she couldn't stand all the persecution of Catholics and how Catholics were being demonized, and how she pretended to be Protestant when asked. Then I asked her, I said, well, your church donations, they go to paying out sex abuse lawsuits for scumbag priests. But do you think you should be another branch of Christianity that wasn't responsible for thousands of cases of pedophilia and covering them up for decades or centuries? And she just stared at me like she'd honestly never thought about it. Your church donations, they go into a collection plate that is then used to fund lawsuits against the Catholic priests. They pay settlements to pedophilia victims that those priests abused, and to pay for the lawyers that defend them in court and keep real change from happening to the Catholic Church. Why do you want to be a part of that? Why do you want to fund a part of that? I'm born and raised Catholic. My parents were Catholic. Well, you know, there's other branches of Christianity. Like, you pretend to be a Protestant when people ask you just so that they don't give you the stigma of being a Catholic. Why don't you actually be Protestant? And I'm not saying that, you know, Protestants are perfect. Again, I'm not religious. I'm not Christian. But I'm just saying, if you belong to a religion that you can't publicly say you're for, you do see it in LA sometimes. People will be like, well, you know, people don't understand Scientology. I like to pretend I'm something else. If you really feel that way, you shouldn't be for that. But Muslims, we get such a bad rap, it's easier to pretend. I'm not really a Muslim because of all the things. Maybe you shouldn't be in that religion, period. Alabama liberal, obviously, they'll be like, well, you don't understand. And I'll be like, I understand completely. My name's Alabama liberal. I was a liberal Democrat in Alabama. My high school class, 95% of people supported George W. Bush. My college, Auburn University, was voted the most conservative college in the United States of America by the Princeton Review. My college experience, every fucking SUV had one of those W stickers on the back of it. One of those little black square W stickers on the back of those SUVs. Dick Cheney came and gave the graduation commencement address the year before I graduated. I understand perfectly. There were 12 Auburn Democrats. There was 1,000 Auburn Republicans. I know what it's like to be in the minority because of your beliefs, but it didn't stop me. And it never stopped me from saying, like, I am a Democrat, arguing with people who aren't like that. You're wrong about this issue or that issue. Sometimes people didn't want to hear it. Sometimes they got mad. Social media puts it out there a lot more. because when you tweet or when you do Facebook posts or whatever, I'm not one of those people that will talk a lot about what they had for lunch. It's mostly political stuff. And a lot of people from my high school class, they would remove me as a friend. They would unfriend me, unfollow me. But it was a lot of people I wasn't that close with, frankly. If the worst that happens to you is you lose tertiary friends by following your true beliefs and being out public about it, that's not really that bad. But again, that's the difference between I'm not ashamed that I'm a Democrat. I think other people have the wrong idea about them versus saying I don't publicly want to say that I'm a Catholic or a Scientologist or a Muslim or a Republican because of the well, that perception is there for a reason. Now, I know that white males come in, that's Trump's troll army, that's who they are. They'll say things like, no, they aren't ashamed. They just don't want ultra-leftists bullying them and harassing them. Does that really convince anybody? Republicans have spent a metric ton of time calling liberals crybabies and snowflakes and uber-sensitive wimps who can't deal with anything. I'm not believing that they are actually that terrified of liberals who they have said over and over again are weak little safe space pushover pussies. Republicans control the Senate, a majority of state legislatures, the White House, the Supreme Court, the military, the police, several powerful industries, the fossil fuels, healthcare, a majority of the rich billionaires who get involved in politics, a majority of the guns, a clear majority of the militias, etc. Liberals have loudmouth Hollywood actors, activist groups, labor unions, which have never been less powerful than they are today, and that's about it. So why would Republicans be so scared of talking about their beliefs unless they honestly knew deep down there was something wrong with them? Because liberals have brainwashed people into thinking all Republicans are racist neo-fascists. But if that's the perception, why belong to it if you're not really like that? By your own admission, you're hiding your beliefs. So you're not even really trying to say, hey, Republicans and Trumpers aren't really what you think, or you're not even trying to win people over. Maybe there's a part of people that know exactly what the Republican Party has become over the years, and they're belonging to it for that very reason. And that's what I think. I don't think it's so much that liberals are all wrong about them and they're just so misunderstood. That part of the Republican Party, that's a feature, not a bug. That's why they do it. People that are really Republican, I don't think there is such a thing as somebody who's part of the Republican Party solely for economic reasons anymore. I truly don't. Like, there are people, they are for small government and they are for deregulation and they are for trickle-down economics and tax cuts, but it's a heavy, heavy, heavy overlap between those people and people who have cultural grievances. But there's a heavy overlap between people who are like, well, income inequality is fake and not real, and being like, well, I don't like that they make me feel bad for being white or having money or these things like that. Like, they overlap heavily. The Venn diagram would be almost a perfect eclipse, if not close to it. Because the cultural grievances, I mean, this is really what I hear more from Trump people. And they'll talk a little bit about, yeah, you know, it's great to have a businessman president. He can do great things for the economy, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, they get to what they really give a shit about. 20 years ago, a man could be a man and a woman could be a woman. And now Democrats make us ashamed of that, or they make us feel embarrassed. And there are things that Republicans, they may have a point on. Things like, is hormone therapy, is it good for a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old? Probably not. To be injected with hormones different than their biology. But saying something like that is like you're a transphobe. No one is a transphobe who believes it could be harmful to inject an 8-year-old boy with estrogen because he prefers Barbie dolls to Transformers. He may be gay, and that's great if he's gay. He may one day decide to become a woman, and that's great. She could be a woman, even as an 8-year-old boy, and that's fine, and that's their rights. But to mess with biology at such a crucial and young age, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that that could be harmful for a kid. Things like, should transgender women, should they be allowed in women's sports? This is worthy of a debate. It's not hate speech to say that transgender women have a clear athletic advantage. Serena Williams is the best tennis player, female tennis player who's ever existed. And when John McEnroe came out there, and John McEnroe's a dick, I think it's easy to be like, John McEnroe's a dick and I'm for Serena Williams. I am for Serena Williams. Serena Williams has to compete in a sport that very clearly discriminates against her and doesn't want her. Anything she does, the European judges and crowds and fans and sponsors, they're very tough on Serena Williams. They've always been kind of mean to her. They've always bullied her to an extent. The other female tennis players, Azarenka, Shaparova, and Amy Shumarenka, you know, all the Eastern European people, they've never liked Serena Williams. Probably influenced the judges to an extent, because all that comes from a lily white European and Eastern European culture. It's real easy to be like, John McEnroe's an asshole when he says something like, Serena Williams wouldn't be in the top 100 if she were, you know, if she had to compete against men. But Serena Williams has said that. Serena Williams came out and said, yeah, male players, they're faster, they're stronger, they have more muscle mass. I couldn't beat them. I wouldn't be in the top 50 if I played men's tennis. She said that. McEnroe says that it's a big deal. Everybody attacks him, says he's a dick. And he is kind of a dick, so it's easy to sort of be on that page. But then Serena Williams said the same thing, agreed with him, and then there was crickets. Like nobody even came back and said, like, oh, well, you know, maybe we were wrong, or you know, the person he said that about agrees with him. There is an advantage to transgender women playing women's sports. And so to admit that, or talk about maybe it's not fair, or maybe it deprives female athletes, that's not bigotry to say something like that. And so you have someone like J.K. Rowling, he is against Trump, is liberal on everything. I mean, this is kind of crazy. For years, she alienated conservative fans because she was against Trump. And you got to keep in mind, I'm from Alabama in like the 90s and 00s when the Harry Potter books were big. There was a big debate. Should schools have them in their libraries? Should we ban Harry Potter books? This is pro-witchcraft. The fear of Satanism, like the West Memphis Three and all those Paradise Lost documentaries. Fear of the devil, like that still exists in certain parts of the United States. People still take that literally. They were saying like, oh, Harry Potter books promote witchcraft. They didn't want people to read them. My mom is a school teacher. She read the Harry Potter books to her class. A couple parents didn't like that and wanted their kids in different classrooms. Majority of the kids loved it because it was a cool book that they enjoyed reading. It inspired a generation of readers. Some adult students that she had come up to her and say, we still remember reading Harry Potter books and you reading them to us and how excited that was, and that made me a better reader. I couldn't read at all until I came in the third grade and you read those books, and that got me excited about learning and knowledge. Fast forward to 2020, and a lot of the liberals are being like, oh, we're not going to read Harry Potter books because J.K. Rowling's a transphobe or whatever. They've put her in that category. Is J.K. Rowling transphobic? She may be, but I've said before, people, you kind of are what you hate to a certain extent. I feel like people that are constantly bashing gays and obsessed with gays or whatever, you know, there may be something there. They're racist. They just can't stand Black Lives Matter. That's all they talk about. That's practically the whole reason they're voting for Trump. I think if it bothers you that bad, if you're a single issue voter to the extent that Black Lives Matter is why you're voting for Trump, you're probably childish at best and a racist at worst. You shouldn't be that afraid of that, that you will vote against your pocketbook, your public health, your country's reputation in the world, a president who says he's going to try to run for a third term and Congress should let him. He said this openly 2 weeks ago, as he's running for a second term, that he looks far from accomplished from winning, says if he's let to do a second term, he'll try to run for a third term. He's admitted this. This man cannot be president. He's dangerous. But to say, oh, well, Black Lives Matter, they're so dangerous, you know, I can't, I mean, really, like, if that's where you're at, that's childish at best, probably racist, almost certainly, to vote exclusively on that issue. When I say people are what they hate, it's interesting to me that nobody's pointed this out. J.K. Rowling writes books as a man. She wrote several thriller books, the Corman Strike novels, under a man pen name. So she's pretended to be a man several times for her public life. She got outed that she was the writer of those books, and she had a falling out with her friend over that, but she was pretending to be a male author to get those books out. Kind of interesting that somebody who does that is very fixated on transgender this and that. And I don't think it's something to fixate on. I don't like when people constantly, bathroom bills are the most important thing, and that's another version of Black Lives Matter, in that like Republicans are so afraid of, well, what if a man puts on a dress and goes into the women's bathroom and takes a dump in there. If he does it, fucking good. Who gives a shit? Women, I'm sorry, but this idea that like transgender people can't exist, so that way a man in a dress can't go in there and take, who wants to be in a woman's bathroom? I used to clean the women's bathroom, men and women's bathrooms at Food World and Walmart and all these grocery store chains. Women's bathroom is a filthy fucking place to be. A women's public restroom is terrible. Like, I can't imagine how sick would a guy have to be like, let me put on a dress and pretend to be transgender just so I can go in there and smell women's shits. That's a weirdo, right? But I mean, even if he's in there, what's the best that's going to happen? Like, oh, he's in the cubicle next to a woman as she pees. Call the police. It's really not that big a deal. This idea that like transgender bathrooms are just so important, both for the Democrats, but the Republicans and these issues, I don't like talking about it that much because I don't think it's really that important. I think these are wedge issues that are almost frivolous compared to, say, the destruction of the planet, like climate crisis. But these cultural grievances, this is where people are coming from. And to push someone like J.K. Rowling, who's left and liberal against Trump, has alienated countless fans by saying her politics publicly, to push her into the conservative category because you view her as transphobic, just for seeming to have an interest. This idea that someone has to be liberal on everything. They have to be liberal on, if you don't say defund the police and abolish ICE, you're not really a liberal, is horseshit. And of course, people like Bill Maher and others, they've pushed back on this idea that, you know, liberal can be anything you want it to be. It's not a narrow definition. The most powerful the Democratic Party has ever been in the history of the United States was from the 1930s to the late 1960s, that glorious period of FDR all the way up to LBJ. But in that time, Some of the Democrats were Dixiecrats. Some of the Democrats were segregationists. Some of the Democrats couldn't give less of a crap about civil rights. LBJ was able to convince them to pass some of that stuff anyway. But in the 50 years since, Democrats haven't been truly powerful in the 50 years since. And it's largely because of cultural grievances, starting with really the 60s, the women's rights movements, end segregation movements, the civil rights movements, MLK, JFK, LBJ, all the acronyms, right? RFK. Starting with all these things, that started to push a lot of white working class people into the arms of the Republican Party, who were happy to embrace them because they've never given a real shit about civil rights anyway. They really haven't. Lincoln was forced to because the South was going to secede from the Union. He was forced to take a stronger stance on that than he probably wanted to or would have. And then since he was assassinated, they've never really cared. Ulysses S. Grant is a liberal when it's convenient, but when there's a recession and they need the gold in the South Dakota hills, fuck the Native Americans that he signed agreements with and said, oh, well, we're going to protect these people. They have to go when he needs the gold on those South Dakota hills. He's going to screw them over again. They've always taken a very opportunistic view of civil rights and minority rights and things like that. LBJ knew that with the Civil Rights Act, he said, we've lost the Southeast for a generation, and he has. They've lost some of the Midwest for a generation. They've lost several of the white working class voters that they used to depend on. Democratic Party's built from Andrew Jackson onward in populism and white working class people and a lot of people that are now for Trump. Trump ties himself to Trump. He talks about Lincoln, you know, here and there and everywhere. And a lot of people, when he was running in 2016, they compared him to Teddy Roosevelt. I saw that Teddy Roosevelt comparison over and over again. He talks a lot about Andrew Jackson, a man he has absolutely nothing in common with except the racism. All the bad of Andrew Jackson, none of the good parts. Brilliant military tactician, strategic. Oh, Andrew Jackson was not a secessionist. He told John Calhoun, in the South Carolina, he said, if you try to secede from my country, I will secede your head from your body. So he was very against the idea of a civil war or Southern secession and things like that. I don't think a lot of people that follow Trump, they know that about him. Again, a lot of historical figures are complicated. Trump's not complicated. There's almost nothing redeeming about him to the extent of every reason you could run through to vote for him, you could find two big counterpunches. But one of the biggest fallacies out there is this idea, Trump is going to protect you from Antifa and Black Lives Matter. You're in danger if Joe Biden gets elected. And they always combine those two groups too, which that annoys the shit out of me. They'll say Antifa and Black Lives Matter together as though they're the same thing. Black Lives Matter is a protest group that has been around since Barack Obama was president. They existed under Obama, so they didn't start directly as a reaction to Trump necessarily. They've had the same issues of police brutality, police shootings, general black welfare. A lot of people don't care about in this country. They could rattle off statistics all day. The fact that 3 times as many black women die in childbirth. Serena Williams, who I mentioned earlier, she said while she was giving birth to her daughter, she had to tell the doctor, I have a condition of blood clots. You have to scan for this. You have to check for this. They didn't want to. They ignored her at first. Her and her husband, had to say it over and over again. Maybe they listened to him because he was a white male. And kind of vouch for this. When my wife had our son and our daughter, she was really worried about jaundice because a lot of people in her family, they had that when their kids were born and things like that. Now, my son and my daughter were at a very low risk of that, but she would have to tell the doctors over and over again, can you please give them the jaundice test? They ignored her. They wouldn't listen to her. They weren't listening to a lot of what she said. And I mean, it really does feel like black women are on their own to a certain extent in the healthcare establishment because they're just not listened to. This idiot lady would keep coming in the room, white woman, British, who would just rattle on and on about, she was trying to sell us breast pumps. It was like basically an infomercial for a specific type of breast pump. And my wife would say, well, what about that jaundice test? They're supposed to give that. And she'd say, yeah, we'll get to that. And then she'd come back 3 hours later, hadn't seen a nurse. A nurse hadn't been in there to check on my wife in 6 hours or whatever. But a woman trying to sell her a breast pump, she could come in there every 30 minutes and ask if we decided to upgrade. And then finally I said, lady, you need to leave. She's changing her own bedpan. I'm having to help her walk to the bathroom so she can use the bathroom. Some of her gauze hadn't been changed. I would go ask him and they'd say, yeah, we'll get to that later. White women right across the hallway were getting very obviously better care, even though had the same health insurance or comparable health insurance. You could feel that the doctors and the nurses and a lot of people were kind of dismissive and didn't want to hear it and weren't listening and things like that. So the fact that Serena Williams, but I would assume her net worth is over $100 million, one of the wealthiest black women in the country, one of the most successful black women in the country, famous, beloved, superstar icon, has to tell a doctor, you have to scan for a rare disorder that I have because I'm a pro athlete. I've been scanned upwards and backwards and been in and out of rehab facilities and my knees, my joints. I've been literally under more medical tests probably just about anyone alive as a professional athlete. She had to put it that way to get him to listen and had to practically beg him before he would do it. And that saved her life. She would have died if she hadn't taken her own medical care into her own hands. They said, yeah, you do have what you said you had. Too bad we didn't listen to you the first three fucking times you said it. Imagine that. One of the most successful athletes of all time, one of the most famous and richest black women in the United States of America, could have died during childbirth, as though this is the 1920s, because a doctor wasn't going to listen to her own medical diagnosis, the condition she knew she had. It was crazy. It's outrageous. But that happens all the time. And Black Lives Matter starts for that reason under Obama. Trump, of course, makes things worse. But that's not why they got started. And it wasn't specifically about him. It did exist under Obama. They had protests. They say, well, Joe Biden, you know, all these protests and things like that. Trump, he's the one that can stop them. They were protesting before Trump. They'll protest after Trump. But protests turned to riots under Trump. I do specifically blame him for the fact that you have the quarantine that lasted for months. People are worried about the economy. They're very economically anxious. The riots were financially based by me, by the Grove. People looted the Nordstrom's and the Apples. They wanted the high-end stores, right? They weren't going to the damn Dollar Tree in the middle of Compton. They went to Beverly Hills specifically, and all these other neighborhoods specifically, downtown LA. They said, you know, the difference between the Rodney King riots and the George Floyd riots, people were going to neighborhoods that they didn't live in. So in Rodney King, they might burn down their own neighborhood. They might ransack the stores or whatever in Inglewood or whatever, but they were specifically going to neighborhoods they didn't live in to get stuff because they needed it. Why? Because the economy had been shut down for several months. The economic anxiety, there's about to be a recession. There's all these shutdowns. The coronavirus is killing people. It's a powder keg. It's like throwing a match into an oil drum. It was the perfect conditions to create something like that I do blame Trump for. That's Black Lives Matter. 95% of their rallies are totally peaceful, and they're not thugs, and they're not doing this. The Republicans said they are. But then they lump that in with Antifa. Antifa, I'm not sure exactly who the fuck they are. I know it stands for anti-fascist. I know there's been a few hundred of them. I know that they go like to Ku Klux Klan rallies or Charlottesville rallies, and they beat up Nazis and Ku Klux Klansmen or whatever. We still haven't seen the so-called Antifa terrorist attacks. They keep saying Antifa terrorist attacks. We haven't seen that. We've seen Cesar Sayoc, the Trump fan, who sent bombs to the entire Democratic leadership from Nancy Pelosi to all the big-name Democrats, Obama. None of his bombs went off, but he did try to basically decapitate the head of a major political party by trying to blow up a dozen different members in the Democratic Party. So we saw Cesar Sayoc, and we've seen the guy at the Charlottesville rally who ran over a woman and killed her. And we've seen the vigilante in Wisconsin who shot two people trying to break into their store that Tucker Carlson defended. We have seen Trump people commit acts of violence and kill people. We haven't really seen that with Antifa other than they beat up some people at a rally. And that's what Trumpers are being used to say. They're just as dangerous. But if beating up people at rallies is so bad, why did Trump encourage his own people to do it at his rallies? Why did he say, hey, beat that guy's ass, get him out of here, take him out on a stretcher, I'll pay your legal bills if you beat that guy up for me? We saw, what, a dozen clips in 2016 of people at Trump rallies getting beat up. We would have seen the same shit this year, but very, very few big rallies because Trump can't because of coronavirus. So this idea that Democrats are so dangerous and they're so afraid of them, and 2016 people say, what's the biggest difference between the two election campaigns? And for me, there's an enormous difference. Trump, when he was the nominee, his platform was real simple of, I'm going to build a wall, I'm going to drain the swamp, I'm going to renegotiate America's failed trade deals. You're going to have health care bigger and better and badder than Obamacare. Don't even worry about it. It's going to be the best in the world. Didn't really specify that, but that was a big thing. 2020 campaign, I'm going to stop Antifa and Black Lives Matter from burning your house down. Like, he hasn't even put forth an agenda. I think that's because all the shit I just mentioned that was the 2016 agenda, he's failed at it. And he's failed at it over and over again. The only big thing he's really done is that tax cut. That's what Republicans wanted, was that tax cut. They did get that. Okay, they did get that out of the Republican Congress from 2016 to 2018. The only real thing that they did, and everything else failed. Drain the swamp, hilarious. That's the most hilarious thing. He's had so many of his cabinet officials have had to resign from corruption scandals. I can't even keep track of them. We would have to do a podcast just about that, and maybe we'll do it one day. Build the wall, hilarious. Hasn't done it. Not even close. Renegotiate America's trade deals. He's given up trade wars. He did a trade war with China, and then it didn't work. Who he has hammered is Canada. He's gotten a better deal out of Canada and some of our allies. He hammers Canada for 50 cents. And then the billions that China he was going to go after, that's mostly gotten away from him. And he hasn't really followed up on that. And he quit pretty quickly. They just showed a few footage of soybean silos in the Midwest rotting and be like, oh, China's not buying our soybeans anymore. Well, I guess we better give up. You know, I heard more about fucking soybean farmers in the last 6 months than the last ever in my whole goddamn life. I never heard about soybean farmers until the last year for the Trump trade war. And it was always that too. Like, they wouldn't say like, oh, well, there's car parts guys that are hurting, or some of the manufacturing, all these different people making supplies, the chip makers, they're under some strain. It was always the damn soybean farmers, right? They'd go to that over and over again. Yeah, he can get a nickel from Canada, but the millions from China, huge central campaign promise. Obamacare, repealing that, replacing that with something better, hilarious. Not even close. These were huge central campaign promises that he hasn't lived up on. 2020, he's not said, here's what my agenda will be, here's what I'm going to do. He doesn't want to be tied down. And then people say, oh, well, you promised us this. He's like, no, I didn't. He's not even attempting to lay out an agenda. He's not even running on anything. He's specifically saying, I can stop Black Lives Matter and Antifa from burning down your house. That's the agenda. Wow, what an aspirational version of America to aspire to. Hey, what I own today, I can continue to own it because a group that has been pumped up into a boogeyman, they're not going to start a fire that they were never going to start in the first fucking place. That's terrific. That's my big goal for voting for this man. Showing up and voting in the middle of a pandemic just to stop an imaginary boogeyman that he's created. Antifa is bullshit. This is some people that exist. I think that they want to inflate how important they really are. They're a little bit like Anonymous, you know, the hacking group that Anonymous, remember, they were doing everything behind the scenes and they weren't really doing shit. Antifa is like that, like a analog version of that. So they're not even in the web and the cyber stuff, that people don't really understand cyber things. So they can be like, oh, well, maybe Anonymous is doing more than we realize. You can't even do that with Antifa. Antifa's stuff's been credited to them that doesn't exist. They said things like, oh, well, they've started the forest fires in Oregon. They went around starting all the forest fires. The West Coast now has the worst air quality in the world. California, Oregon, and Washington, we've lost 1 million acres in the last couple weeks. That's a town. That's a big town. That's a huge fucking deal to lose that many acres. It was started by a gender reveal party. Some obnoxious, probably, I'm sure, white couple went out there and they were going to announce the sex of their baby, and they shot fireworks or something like that and started this massive blaze. California now has worse air quality than China does just from forest fires. And it wasn't Antifa. It wasn't a bunch of kids going out there deliberately. Why would they? Why would Antifa, who you would think would have an environmental bent, how does starting fires on the West Coast and burning down Washington State, how does that help them do anything, right? Well, it doesn't, if you really think about it. But that was a bogus conspiracy theory started by Republicans, put out there. People say that, but like, well, them forest fires out there in California, Brody, was that Antifa that started that? No, it wasn't. It wasn't, you know, it was just some bullshit rumor that they put out there, and then Trump's base believes it and spread it, and they don't really care because they're not trying to learn about it that much. It tracks with what they want to believe. The forces of the Democratic Party are lawless. Doesn't matter that Republicans have the militias. They've actually had far more white nationalist terrorists. Not even white nationalist terrorists. Cesar Sayoc is Hispanic, but they've had far more right-wing terrorists. Some people call it white nationalist terrorist attacks. I want to say right-wing because I want to expand it a little bit. Other than 9/11, the biggest terrorist attack on American soil is Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City. The Unabomber rampaged through. Every powerful left-wing figure that's been killed, RFK, JFK, MLK, Medgar Evers, all the assassinations have been Democratic. Gabby Giffords was almost killed by a gunman that was a Republican. Most of the white men that do public shootings, they have some type of a right-wing or nationalistic bent. You could run through it over and over again. So this idea that Democrats are more violent than Republicans, this is horseshit. I mean, it's just absolute horseshit. Even something like the riots for George Floyd, that's a reaction to violence. That's a reaction to, there's a police shooting for a black man about one a week. And if you add up total police shootings, which I think it's a miscalculation Democrats have done, to really focus on black-only police shootings, like if you focused on some of the white ones, I think you would broaden your coalition. But there's actually more shootings of white civilians by cops than there are black civilians. So I think if you had broadened that out to police shootings generally, you wouldn't have 80% of the country saying like, well, I'm not black, so it doesn't really affect me, so I'm going to take a pass on caring about this. You wouldn't have had that. You would have said police shootings in America are out of control. But even the riots, they're a reaction to violence. This idea that Trump can save you when he's creating the violence, he's stirring it up. He tells Bob Woodward, well, I didn't want to create panic with coronavirus. I didn't want people to panic. Same man goes out there and says, Antifa and Black Lives Matter are going to burn down your house. He's hiding in the White House bunker while they're outside the White House about to burn it down. I mean, it's a little crazy that he would try to put forth that argument when all he does is try to stoke fear and division. But when I say sunk cost fallacy, and I really want to, I meant to put this a little bit earlier in the podcast. Hope you're still listening and still with me at this point, because this is really important. I truly believe that sunk cost fallacy explains Trump's base better than almost anything. Sunk cost fallacy is an economic term that means the more money you put into something, the more emotionally attached you may come to it, even if it's a really bad investment. So you might have heard the phrase, good money after bad. That happens. People want to rebuild their kitchen and the remodel goes way more expensive. It takes longer. It becomes clear that they're being ripped off. They might have overpaid for it 4 or 5 times what it should have been. But because they don't want to admit they got suckered or snookered, they might be like, well, this is really good and I'm really happy with this. I kind of believe that explains Campbell Hall parents, the private school that's become a favorite target of mine. I think people, they want to believe that they're paying 40 grand a year for an education that's better than a public school education. Depending on where they live, it might be worse. Some of the best public schools in Los Angeles, like in Beverly Hills and some of those districts, they may have a better education system than Campbell Hall does. But people don't want to admit, oh, I wasted $500,000 from K through 12 just for no reason, just because they got took. So they become very protective of the school. They basically become like, oh, no, it's worth paying for. I'm getting a good deal. I'm getting my money's worth. Sunk cost fallacy can be a gambling term. You spend $100 at blackjack, you lose it. So you'll spend $1,000 more trying to get that back. Each hand is going to be the winner. That's what's going to turn it around for you. And people become very convinced of this belief. That's why gambling works, why casinos make so much money. Well, except for Trump's casinos, of course. But that's why casinos almost never lose money. People become protective of bad investments. This could happen for anything. But I use it politically because I think this explains Trump. I think his base, they can't admit they were fooled because that'll make them look like the idiots. Earlier in the podcast, what I said, the simplest explanation is the best. Every educated person in America is saying, he's a con man. He's a sociopath. He's fucking crazy. Don't vote for this man. You do and you're an idiot. You're elitist and you're a snob. And I'm going to show that I got street smarts. You got book smarts. Book smarts sucks. I've got the common sense that you don't have. You think you know everything. Joe the plumber type mentality, right? So they got to go out there and they got to prove, no, you were wrong, whatever. But if they have to come back and be like, well, Trump's getting 200,000 Americans killed for no reason. The economy's worse than it ever has. He clearly doesn't know what he's doing. He's a fake. He's a phony. He cares more about China and Russia than he does the American citizens. He's going to divide this country. He could lead us into a civil war. He's an aspiring tyrant. He said he won't accept the results of the second election. He's saying he's going to have a third term. If they have to come out and admit that all the shit people told him was true about this guy, then they were wrong. And the whole point was, we know more than the educated people. We know more than the book smarts because we got street smarts. And if it becomes like, no, you just got your wallet stolen, that's got egg on their face. And they cannot admit, they would rather die than admit that. And I think that really drives a lot of Trump's base. This kind of chip on your shoulder, when you combine the white victimhood and the persecution complex and the conservative persecution fantasies that I talked about earlier, that whole thing is like the world is against us. We're being oppressed by the know-it-all media and the elites and all these snobs that look down on us and shit like that. When you internalize that, then it becomes very hard, if not impossible, to admit, oh no, they had a point. Trump's a terrible president. We've been led astray. You would rather eat a bullet than admit that shit because that's just so central to your idea that they don't know anything. They've wrongly discounted you and they look down on you and they don't know how smart you really are. And they'll never do that and that'll never come out. So I think sunk cost fallacy, it does explain a great percentage of his base and why they will never leave him. But I think deep down, I think he's really bad for them too. Because like I said, you know, he's a narcissist. He's addicted to press coverage and people kissing his ass. And anything bad that happens is bad for him somehow, and lack of empathy and things like that. Bad for his base to be addicted to that. Because when you see him calling to Fox News and he's ranting and raving about the libs and they won't give him a break and they're so unfair to him and they're persecuting him, it's bad for anybody to absorb that on a daily basis. That's why they say people that are severely depressed, they can bring other people around them down. And that's what it's like. When Biden talked about in his speech, it's like a dark cloud has fallen over the country. He had it exactly right. That's what Trump feels like. You're inside the mind of a man who everything's about him. And it's only about, is it good for him or bad for him? Does this person kiss my ass or are they against me? Are they with me or are they against me? There's no nuance. He doesn't really know anything. It doesn't matter if Kim Jong-un is a dictator as long as he sucks up to him. And it doesn't matter that Justin Trudeau is a good man. He made fun of him at a high school cafeteria or something like that. So that's how he views the world. And for everybody to be sucked into him, bitching and whining and complaining and talking about, I can't get a break and it's so unfair and I need fighters and you got to go out there and even Lisa Murkowski's against me and Mitt Romney he's a fake and a phony and a fraud, and just ranting and raving and sweating and huffing and puffing and talking about all the people that are against him. I mean, now it's not just the Democrats. He hates the Lincoln Project. He hates all the Never Trump Republicans. He hates several Republican senators and congresspeople. He talks about he wants to get them primaried and out of the party. Locking your base into a constant war you can't win. And even if they win certain things, it's a what's known as a Pyrrhic victory, which is that the casualties are so heavy. Even if they win in November, the casualties are so heavy, it'll be as bad as if they lost. In 2016, they had Trump as president. They had a Republican House, a Republican Senate, a Republican Supreme Court, and they were as mad as they've ever been. They were as angry as if Obama had been president. You're locking your base into a constant mood of anger and hatred. It can't be good for them to absorb this all the time. And that's why I do think that if Trump lost, I think it'd be the best thing that ever happened to his base, because they'd do for him what they did for Bush. Bush lost, and then they reformed him into, like, 6 months after Bush was out of office, they said, oh, do you miss me yet? And it's like, the only person who ever missed you is the Iraqi reporter who threw the shoe at you. I mean, when Obama took office, they were able to reform it into, like, oh, if only Bush were still here and all this shit. Never mind that he left office with a 25% approval rating. They'll do that for Trump. When Trump's out of office, it'll be easier to reform him into, like, oh, if only he'd been given a second term. Imagine all the glorious things we could have accomplished. You know, that gone with the wind, hand over the forehead, bygone days, fainting couch. Like, if only we could have gotten the promise and potential of a second Trump administration. If he's actually reelected for 4 more years, then it becomes they have to defend this man who's increasingly indefensible, that the majority of the country does not want. Well, yeah, well, how do you explain 2016, smart guy? They say that shit like he won. In 2016, Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than he did. So they say things like, if you don't think we're hard to poll and you don't think we're hiding out there, how do you explain 2016? It happened exactly as it would have. Hillary got 3 million more votes than Trump did. She was beating him in national polls, and she beat him in the race. But within several states, like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, she was always within that margin of error. It was always like 1 point ahead or something like that. But the media didn't, you know, I guess we just didn't think it was possible that somebody could win by 3 million votes and still lose the Electoral College, and that the Electoral College would be stupid enough to uphold that result, that they would come out and say, like, oh, well, the popular vote doesn't matter. For in the Electoral College, the results have always been somewhat close. Like with Gore and Bush, they were essentially tied in the popular vote. Gore did win the popular vote, but it wasn't really that far apart. This was a very clear, the people have spoken, and the Electoral College just ignored it, even though there is no law that says the Electoral College can't go with the popular vote. They can choose to do that, but they just didn't. And so I guess we just didn't think that was possible. But they brag about 2016 like he won the popular vote, or he led with the mandate. A majority of voters have never voted for Donald Trump. They've never wanted Donald Trump. He's never had a majority in a single poll that's ever been done, legitimate poll that's ever been done. The mass majority of Americans do not want him. So do you really think it's going to get better if he forces his way into a second term or cheats his way into a second term, then refuses to leave, and then you spend the next 4 years being like, well, this president that a majority of Americans have never voted for, who he's never had a majority in a single poll, only 60 million people have ever voted for him. So you're talking about 20% of the entire country has voted for him. 80% of people have not. They clearly do not want him. They don't like him. He's divisive. He's costing us a lot of money in American lives. He has no plan. He's an incompetent fucking moron. Do you really think your life's going to get better having to defend a man like that for 4 more years? Of course, if Biden wins, then Republicans can pick up Senate and congressional seats in 2022, because they always do. The party of the president always loses in midterm races. And then in 2024, you got old man Biden, who may not run again. And even if he does, you can put up somebody good against him. You kind of win. If you really care about conservatism and Republican Party, you probably should vote for Joe Biden and hope Trump loses. That's what I think about Trump's base. Thanks for listening, everybody.